Right.
Okay. All right.
All right, I'm sitting here with Ken Wright, who is a resident of Lillooet, a well-known naturalist, ornithologist, and I guess that pretty well covers it, right? Okay. Anyway, Ken recently went on an interesting trip. He was in, well, I'll let Ken tell you where he was.
Yeah, I joined some friends on a safari to Madagascar.
And I mean, most of us have heard of Madagascar. A lot of people know it as a movie or a series of movies now.
Yeah.
Tell us where it is. What's special about it?
Sure. Madagascar is located literally on the other side of the planet. It's about as far away as you can get from Lillooet. and it's in the southern hemisphere off the east coast of Africa. It's about 200 nautical miles off the coast of Mozambique, and separated by the Mozambique Channel, and I guess that puts it into context. And it's got a population of close to 40 million people. The island is 1,500 kilometers long, and it's quite narrow, and it has an area of 590,000 square kilometers.
So that's putting that in Canadian terms, or in a more familiar setting size-wise.
Right, yeah, that's very
about
good.
Same size as
Saskatchewan.
Oh, okay,
just
great.
A little
okay,
bit smaller than Saskatchewan.
Right. So I guess we shouldn't be fooled that it's the same shape as Vancouver Island into thinking that it's the same size as Vancouver Island. It's a pretty good sized place.
Right, it's a much larger than Vancouver Island. And we can chat more, but we flew around in our own plane and got to see a lot of the country. So I had a good sense of how big it was just by virtue of flying across it. And
So from a naturalist's point of view, what's interesting about Madagascar?
Madagascar is a dream place. It's really a naturalist, biologist and ecologist, utopia. It's full of species that are found nowhere else in the world, what we call endemics. It's got, and not only that, it has the one of the highest ratios of endemics of any area in the world, and it's because it's geographically isolated by water off Africa, but it's got a very long history of evolution independent of Africa. So a lot of the species that are found there don't occur in Africa. They're actually unique to Madagascar. For instance, the lemurs, which we'll talk more about, which is how the island is most famous for, I guess, next to the movie. The lemurs are found nowhere else. They're just found in Madagascar.
All species of lemurs?
All species of lemurs.
Okay,
entire lemur clan.
Learned something new here.
Proboscideans, which is a more primitive group of the primates, where the anthropoid, the more modern primates. The lemurs are a more ancestral group of lemurs. They are only found in Madagascar and on the Comoros Island, which is just off the coast of Madagascar in the southern Indian Ocean.
Okay. Yeah. From a geological point of view, if you know, thinking in terms of continental drift and that sort of thing, what was it attached to previously, or was it attached to anything?
Well, part of it was attached, the western side of it was attached to Africa, the eastern side was attached to the Indian subcontinent.
Okay.
And of course, there's been a lot more drift between the rift or whatever, the separation, between India and Madagascar than, of course, Africa and Madagascar.
Right.
But that is a very good question. The separation's around 80 million years or something from Africa, I believe.
Okay.
Don't quote me on that. I've read this stuff, and unfortunately it's gone in and out. But anyways, it's very important. It's integral to the evolution of animals out there, this geographic isolation. And so the geological process of separating from these continents has a very profound effect on what species assemblages are there, because some things have Asiatic ancestors and some things have African ancestors that are found on the island. So
when the Indian subcontinent and Africa drifted apart, you're saying that actually part of India got ripped off of India to become part of Madagascar at that point. That's fascinating.
I think so.
Okay.
I'd have to look more at that. I don't know exactly how it worked, but the bottom line is that it's got elements of Asiatic ancestry and elements of African ancestry, which makes it a very complex flora and fauna,
and
biota.
Yeah,
And in terms of endemism, or the rate of species that are found in one area and nowhere else, plants really have their zenith there. It's 80% of the world's plant families occur in Madagascar. There's nowhere else in the world that can claim that. So that's diversity, not at the species level, but at the higher level, taxonomic level, of families.
Right. Okay.
So 80% of the world families. So it's tremendously diverse at that level. And I don't know the exact stats, but I think 5% of the species in Madagascar are found nowhere else in the world, and that's plants and animals combined. Mm-hmm. So there's 5% of the world's flora and fauna restricted to Madagascar.
Okay, well, that gives us some idea why a naturalist would be particularly interested in it.
Yeah.
What were you specifically hoping for, looking for when you went there?
Yeah, this is my second trip to Madagascar. The first time I went by ship, and it was really the ultimate teaser trip. I was working on the ship and as a tour manager and sort of moving people around, getting onto buses, doing day trips and stuff like that. But we were very restricted because we stayed on the ship to industrial ports and not exactly the most naturalistic side of Madagascar. We did make a couple of excursions, and this was in 2011. Back then, we had issues with Somalian pirates off the northern coast of Madagascar, and so our ship was restricted to a certain latitude, which restricted a whole bunch of opportunities for us to see species and stuff. Right. So I had a lot of expectation from that first teaser trip. And anyway, so this trip, it just opened my eye. I really wanted to see, of course, the lemurs and a variety of species. We did quite well. We did a lot better than I would have thought we did on that front, and in terms of what we saw, and of course photographed these things. And in terms of birds, it's also amazing. There's about 120 species of endemic birds, and we saw a huge proportion of those. So we did very well for the birds.
So as a lifelong birder, and birders, for listeners who don't know, birders are very fond of keeping lists of birds, birds they've seen in a particular region, or even seen while doing a particular activity, or for almost every birder, there's the master list, the life list, right? And so how many species were you able to add to your life list?
Right. Actually, I haven't really completely added up my life list. That's sort of not my primary drive, but I did see probably at least 80 or 90 new species that I hadn't seen before in my life. So it was phenomenal. I mean, most of the birds I saw I'd never seen before. So it was like a kid in a candy store. Yeah. I mean, you're just walking around. It's like these vangas and there's also four families of birds that are found nowhere else in Madagascar. Yeah. The vangas, the assateas, the ground rollers, cuckoo roller, and one other that's escaping me right now. Anyways, and we saw a representative from each of those groups, but we did very well with the vangas. The vangas have, they're kind of akin to the Galapagos finches.
Oh, okay, we're talking small songbirds then.
They're not small. They're probably robin, kind of crow size, medium sized, but they are songbirds or passerines. But they've irradiated, and meaning that they've adapted to different niches on the island, and in a huge way. And I believe the last count, they have at least 16 or 18 species of them, of vangas alone. And they're very cool. And the one bird, and I mean, this is the bird. I mean, it's the most beautiful color I've ever seen, a blue. It's called the blue vanga. Mm-hmm. And I tell you, when you see it, you just look at this thing, and it's just, I mean, it blows a mountain bluebird out of the water. And I mean, that's hard. tall order to. So, but this blue vanga is just unbelievable, cerulean, deeper than sky blue. Anyways, that was gorgeous. And so there's a whole variety of them, and they're different colors, they're different forms. One of them has got this huge, long, decurved bill, and it's called the sickle-billed vanga, white head and black shoulders, and it's about the same size as a jay. And it actually is very reminiscent of the Clark's Nutcracker, which we have right here in Lillooet. So a very, very similar. And so they have some affiliation to the crow. They think they're somewhat related to the crows. And
so these are all members of one species or members of one family that evolved from one original ancestor, right? Or one original species and ancestor species.
Yes. Yeah, and I don't know the full history of that, of what they came from initially, but yes, you're right. They came from probably one species, and then they radiated
to the different parts of the island.
And there's a lot of overlap in terms of range, geographic, but they radiated in terms of ecological niches. So some of them feed in the upper canopy of a tree. Some of them feed near the ground. There's one called the nuthatch vanka, and it runs up and down the side of a tree like a nuthatch, and it's small and it's colorful and it's quite something. So a very interesting group. Yeah.
Now you've talked about them being brightly colored birds generally in terms of birds and other species that tend to be brightly colored we think of tropical, although in this case subtropical climes. Does that generally apply to Madagascar? Or are there lots of brightly colored this, that, and the other things, whether birds or reptiles or whatever, insects, all that stuff?
That's a really good question. And it does. It is tropical and subtropical.
Yeah.
It has cloud forest as well because it has high elevation. It goes up to over 10,000 feet. You do see colors for sure, like this blue vanka as an example.
Yeah.
But and there's many other birds that have some level of color. They are not as colorful as birds that I've seen in like the Central America, in Costa Rica or Panama or Ecuador, as a New World species. Mm-hmm. They're a little bit drabber overall.
Mm-hmm.
That said, there's definitely some colorful birds, but I wouldn't say they're phenomenal birds. It's just a very, very interesting area. Yeah.
So you were just talking a little about the vegetation in the forests. Can you give us a picture of, in an island, 1,500 kilometers long?
Mm-hmm.
I am imagining that there's a fair amount of variation, particularly as you proceed further south.
Mm-hmm.
I would think that the vegetation forms would probably come closer to something like temperate zone style vegetation. Is that correct?
Not exactly. The vegetation is quite is quite diverse, and that's because of the climatic gradient. So if you think about it, it's just like BC. On the west coast here, we get lots of rain. The mountains are really, it's moist and temperate rainforest. On the dry side, here we are in semi-arid conditions with sagebrush and dry stuff. Well, in Madagascar, most of the weather comes from the east.
Okay,
so it's easterly, the Indian Ocean side. Right. And there's a mountain range that runs up and down parallel along the coast. And, of course, that causes orographic lift. So that's the rainforest zone. So in that rainforest, it's a beautiful, beautiful rainforest. We went to this beautiful park called Maswala National Park on the northeastern coast. And it's just the most lush, beautiful. It's just incredible. Multi-story, huge leaves and fronds and amazing. Palm trees, the greatest diversity of the world's palms are there.
Mm-hmm.
And then, as you get higher, you get more in the cloud forest, you get more, mosses and stuff like that and fairly big trees. And then as you get away from the mountains on the dry side, it's just, and a lot of this has also been altered by humans. Mm-hmm. There's been a lot of damage to the habitat. But it's very dry and thorny. And then you've got on the southern coast, you've got a very special ecosystem found nowhere else in the world, which I really like. It's called the spiny forest.
Hmm.
And it's absolutely incredible. It's got this octopus spine tree with these little, absolutely incredible forms. And it's full of all its own attendant, lemurs and birds that are found nowhere else in the world. It's just absolutely incredible. So.
Yeah.
Yeah, so
one of the most famous forms of vegetation in Madagascar is the baobab tree, and I've never seen one myself. I've certainly never been to Madagascar. I've only seen them on video. Can you tell us about them?
Yeah,
where they grow, what kind of forest they're in, and
absolutely,
that sort of thing.
Yeah, they're baobabs. There's eight species in the world. There's one or two of them are in Africa as well, so you can see them in Africa. Very interesting trees, definitely worth looking up. But they're kind of like a wine bottle, big vats of water, and then they come to a little narrow constriction, and then little sprig branches at the top with tiny leaves. They're just absolutely incredible. If you can see Planet Earth, there's a documentation where they flew to film these, you know, and they crashed the balloon into the canopy.
I've seen that.
Yeah, yeah. Anyways, and so, yeah, and so, there's six or seven species of baobabs in Madagascar. They're most of them are endemic. Spectacular trees. In fact, our first event when we got to Madagascar, we flew into Morondava, and we got up before light, and and we got there to photograph the sunrise, and it was incredible to watch the stars and see these Jurassic-like trees, very prehistoric-looking primitive trees, up. And they were silhouetted by this beautiful, clear sky. Mm-hmm. And so we're photographing. And then, of course, the sunrise and seeing the shape of them being silhouetted. Right. It was incredible. But people live right amongst them. And this is a famous spot everybody goes. It's called Baobab Alley. And there's these huge trees on either side of the road. And the trunks are, you know, they're as wide as this... is your place.
So you're saying that a trunk of a tree would be like 12 feet in diameter?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, easily. That's the large one. That's the Grandidier.
And can you give us an idea of an average height?
What is the average height? I don't know. 50 meters or something like that.
Yeah, okay. 40 so meters. That's pretty impressive sounding.
Something like that. I might be a little bit off, but I don't have the dimensions here, but they're amazing trees. Amazing trees. Yeah. Yeah, fun stuff.
And I would guess that they have their own probably types of wildlife that are associated with them.
To an extent. They are not a dominant forest species. In fact, when we were flying into Morondava, you see these things stand out because they're so big, but they're low density, the stem density.
Right.
So they definitely stand out, but there's all kinds of other vegetation that's richer for birds that are down low and shrubs and stuff like that. But these things just stand out, and they're amazing. And there's a lemur. I think there's one of the lemurs that feeds on the flowers and the nectar from when they flower seasonally. But it's a great tree and amazing place. But Grandidier's baobab, amazing. Yeah, amazing. That's
wonderful.
The largest one, yeah.
So you mentioned lemurs several times now. Yeah. Just before we launch into that, tell us what a lemur is. It's a mammal. I think most people know that, but can you describe a lemur for us?
Sure, yeah. Lemur is a primate, and it's... So there's two groups of primates. There's the more modern ones, which we're a part of, the anthropoid, and then there's the more primitive ones. And the lemurs are in this primitive group called the prosimians, and they what the differentiating features is a bunch of them, but they have a non-prehensile tail, variable length. The indri has a very short one, and some of them have very long ones. They have a more pointed snout like a fox. They have a wet nose or rhinarium. Mm-hmm. Their eyes are incredible. Oh my gosh, they have these amazing eyes those are sort of the main differences.
And are they all roughly the same size, or is there
wide
variation?
No, there's a lot of variation. There's most lemurs, which are the smallest, and there's a huge group of those. They've radiated to like 20 or 30 species. Yeah. And
say mouse lemur, are they truly mouse-sized, or are they bigger than that?
They're bigger than
that. All right, thank you.
Not much, though, but they're definitely bigger than a mouse. But the smallest lemur in the world, I think, is the smallest primate in the world. Yeah. It's 30 grams, and it's mouse lemur, which was described and found by one of the preeminent lemur researchers, an American, Russell Mittermeier, and he's done tremendous work for lemur conservation, and he's written books. I have a tome called The Lemurs of Madagascar that this guy did, and he's found all these new species in his career as just studying lemurs in Madagascar. Absolutely amazing. And so that's at the small end. And of course, then you have intermediate ones like the sportive lemurs and the bamboo lemurs, and then you get larger into the rough lemurs and the Indriidae, which is the Indri, of course, is the largest lemur in the world.
Give us an idea of size there.
They would be, they would be about 120 centimeters maybe in length, and they have a short tail. And they're up to upwards of 10, 11 kilograms in weight, so 20, 25 pounds. Okay. Lemurs are not big on the whole, but this is the largest of them. Interestingly, though, the giant lemurs, unfortunately, don't exist anymore, but they were all wiped out. There was 17 species of lemurs that have been wiped out since the arrival of man. So they're just not as... They just weren't compatible with the changes that humans, and they were hunted and that sort of thing. But the giant lemurs got much larger than the lemurs that exist today. And so, but they've all been eradicated. They're all extinct. But they're, in spite of that, there's an amazing diversity of lemurs. According to Mittermeier, there's about 100 species.
That's pretty impressive, actually. Are they protected by law?
They are, but however, Madagascar is a very poor third world country, and people need to eat, and they need to live off the land, and their population has burgeoned tremendously. Yeah. So the loss of habitat has fragmented the population severely, some more than others. Some lemurs are adaptable, just like we have birds that are adaptable here, and others are really skittish with people, like the injury. And the rough lemurs, they just don't like people, and so they don't do as well. And but fortunately, Madagascar, you know, see the writing on the wall. They get a lot of money from tourism because of the lemurs.
Yes.
And so there's been a huge effort, conservation effort, resulting in tens of millions of dollars that have gone into buying a habitat, basically, and protecting it within the Madagascar National Parks. And that's, of course, where we went on our trip. We just went from that. We went from the best place to the next best place to see these different lemurs. And they were all great national parks. We had great, wonderful guides that were English-speaking. And we saw, in the end, 26 species, or about a quarter of the world's lemurs on our trip. So
okay, we're going to come back to the lemurs. And you've mentioned a particular species called the Indri. We'll come back to that in a sec. But you mentioned that the population of Madagascar has burgeoned. And in preparation for your coming to do this interview, I did a little research. And I believe that over about the past 20 or so years, the population has nearly tripled of Madagascar, or either that, or their census taking methods are better now than they were. I'm not sure which, but it struck me as being really an enormous, just a huge, huge change.
Yes, and it's a very good point. With that population, it's just there's so much limited resources, and of course, people they eat rice there. That's a big thing. They export rice. The Chinese export rice there. And you know, so what they've done is it's called slash and burn agriculture. So they just basically slash and burn the forest, the primary forest, and that's the habitat. And so it's changed the climate in places. It's that severe, the impact, and as well as annihilating the native flora and fauna. Definitely issues there, but at the same time, there's signs of some hope with these reserves. It just means very fragmented and minimal populations, which is not a good thing, but it's at least those populations are still functioning right now and still reproductive.
So this is a place where tourist traffic is really vital to the continuation of the ecology as we know it. Right?
Absolutely, absolutely. Yeah. Fortunately, people like Russell Mittermeier, you know, he's affiliated with one of the zoos in the States, but, you know, some of these zoos have huge, you know, they have deep funds, funds, and I think there's a zoo in Germany as well, a zoological garden or something that then ended up, you know, buying a huge national park, Madagascar. Wow. So this is the extent that people. It's huge. Fortunately, there's those affiliations. Apparently, the best place to see lemurs outside of the wild, and probably the cheapest place to see them, is in Duke University in North Carolina, in Durham, North Carolina. It's called the Duke Lemur Center. You can go onto just Google it, and you can look at their website, and there's all kinds of factoids about the lemurs that they have. Mm. But they have a captive breeding program. They've created little small habitat islands that are probably similar in size to some of the smaller fragments that are left in Madagascar, but they've done this in North Carolina. Yeah. So there's a more economical way to see lemurs in person, and an even more economical way still is if you can get to an IMAX theater. There's an IMAX documentary that Patricia Wright, who's not related to me, she is one of the major lemur researcher American, the actor Morgan Freeman.
Narrated.
Exactly. And called The Lemurs of Madagascar. It's on IMAX. It was released within the last year.
I know as a birder, one thing you're always doing when you're outside is listening for birds. Do lemurs make noise?
Yes, they do, actually, and I'm glad you asked. The lemurs do have calls that are unique, and some of them are noisier than others. Some of them are pretty quiet, like the most lemurs. I never heard a most lemur make any noise. They probably do, but there's one lemur, the Indri, that I mentioned. This is the largest of the world's lemurs that are living today, and it's amazing. It makes this call. And they live in groups, family groups, and they're territorial, just like birds protecting their territory, and so they just call out in the morning. And so we went to Andasi Bay National Park, which is northeast of Antananarivo, the capital. Southeast of Antananarivo, which is the capital of Madagascar, and a beautiful area, very well protected. And there's a huge population of Indris in there. And so we're walking along in this ridge in this really, really open canopy forest and waiting to hear them. Sadly, we weren't the only ones. There was a lot of us.
Yeah.
And they start calling, and that's how people find them. But they're calls, and we'll play a
okay,
call
great.
Just to give you a sense of them. I think they're amazing, the call. But they resonate up to 2 or 3 miles away, making them one of the loudest animals out there.
Right.
I don't know how many animals can, lions apparently can call quite long distances, but I think, in terms of primates, I think they're the loudest primate.
That's pretty impressive. Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Why don't we play their call?
Okay.
It's a nice thing about a radio show. You can do the sound effects.
Yep. Sounds good.
Yeah. So this is the territorial singing of the lemur, of the Indri.
Okay, well, I have to say that's a very, very impressive song. And, I mean, were you hearing, it sounded like at most maybe three of them we were hearing at a time there. Did you hear more than that at once?
Yeah, that's interesting. We did. We heard different groups. I don't know how many were singing at the same time within a group. I think you're right. There was at least three individuals there. Mm-hmm. But their group size, I think, is like between, two or three animals and up to maybe six or eight animals. But they're in different groups. But one group would be calling and we would hear another group, but they have big territories. So this other group would be, half a kilometer, away, and we'd be hearing them calling back and forth. So it was really neat. Jeff, it was a magical experience to have these.
I'm sure it was.
And the sad thing was, is that I had no idea how popular, this might end up being what saves lemurs down the road, but having the tourism, and it was incredible that we'd be on this network and there was trails everywhere, and we'd hear these lemurs and we'd get there and there'd be 60 or 70 people from all parts of the world, and they're all like standing in the trees below, and everybody's in each other's way trying to get photos and it's really quite something, and you're kind of nudging your way in, and it's just like this, it's like Grand Central Station. It's just incredible below these groups. And so every time a group would erupt into song, people would just magnet. They'd be there instantly. And you couldn't get to a group without there already being people there. Because there were just so many people on the landscape. So in terms of human ecology, it was very interesting to watch this.
Well, and human behavior as well,
I mean, it made Stanley Park look quiet. I mean, it was unbelievable. And here we are, every day on this trip, we got up at 4 and we were out the door, before it was dark to get to places, first light and everything. Yeah. And we couldn't get there soon enough.
Yeah.
It was absolutely incredible. And this is true of other locations, more in Daba. Anyway, there's another park near there that we went to, which is the most beautiful rainforest I've seen in my life. And we went there to see the Diademid Sifaka, which is an absolutely amazing. It's the second largest lemur in the world. Very beautiful, buff and reddish and white, and absolutely incredible. They can leap, lemurs can leap, some of them, 8 or 10 meters across from tree to tree. They fling themselves. Absolutely incredible. So we went into this beautiful forest and oh man, it was just like, you couldn't believe it. It was just, it was like going to another planet. It was, you know, you think of Star Trek, you know, and they land on these other, you know, foreign planet, you know, these extraterrestrial life, and you just think, wow, like this is, everything's new. Incredible.
Absolutely incredible. Going to in your case, nearly unfamiliar environment such as this, it must almost create the sense these are alien life forms, at least until, you know, you get used to it.
They're alien to me, for sure. Absolutely. Yeah. But before we break, I just thought I'd show you some pictures.
Okay.
And we'll post these on
the website.
On the website. Yeah. So, but just a few samples. This group of birds that walk along the ground, a little bit like a grouse, not really, but they're the kuas. That's a giant kua.
Okay, well, it looked vaguely grouse-like in its general shape, if not, I don't know about size, but the shape is.
Yeah, and here's one of the lemurs I really like, the sifakas, or shifakas, as they call them.
Yeah.
Be careful how you say that.
Yes.
this is the...
I won't even try.
Don't even try. This is the Deccan sifaka, and, they're beautiful.
Okay,
look at the eyes.
Oh, they're fat, they're amazing, big and brown. They look like almost like the expression a dog would look at you with. Now, I don't have a sense of scale on that. Can you just go back to that one?
Yeah.
That looks like a fairly good-sized lemur, is it? Okay.
It is. This is a big tree that it's on, a big deciduous tree, probably one of the figs or ficus trees. And, this is a good-sized lemur. It's not as big as the Indri, but it's definitely... Yeah, I would say it's larger than the average lemur.
And for our listeners, it's got mostly white fur and a black face and then these big, beautiful, perfectly round brown eyes in the center of its face.
And here's another one related to it. This is called the Verroes sifaka. And the Verroes sifaka is an amazing animal. It's when it walks on the ground, it can't walk forwards due to anatomical reasons because they're just so adapted for the trees. But they live in a fairly dry spiny forest and the drier forest, so they're on the ground a lot.
Right.
And so when they run, they, for balance, they put their hands up, and so they're sideways.
So they're running on two legs.
They run on two legs, and they run with their hands up for balance, and it looks hilarious.
Again,
go onto YouTube and look at. I have a video of one which you'll see when I give a talk, hopefully for the Naturalist
in
spring. But you can find them online, but they're just incredible. It's at the Berenty Reserve, Berenty a reserve in southern Madagascar in the spiny forest, and it's incredible. There's they're everywhere there. It's rife with them.
And looking at this picture, what I'm seeing is an animal. It looks as if its rear legs are considerably longer than its front legs. Is that correct?
Much longer. That's right. There's a huge differential. So. Madagascar, we've been focusing and talking on about lemurs, but the amphibians and diversity of reptiles and amphibians is tremendous. Here we have this is a day gecko, which are very beautiful.
Let's go back to it for a second.
Sure.
It looks like a green lizard essentially to give people an idea.
Yep.
But I see it has a red patch on its back. Is that something that's standard? That's normal for them?
Okay. It is. It varies a little bit from individual to individual, but is. So that's a day.
And how big are they approximately?
They can get up to about 20 centimeters, almost a foot.
Okay.
Yep. Madagascar's a tremendous place for bats. And one of our listeners, a very keen listeners, and Vivian Birch Jones,
we have a lot of bat fans, but
she would love this place. An incredible place. Yeah. This is a very small bat. This is a little micro chiroptera, so one of the insect-eating bats, similar to the ones that we have in BC, inside a cave we went into, and it was incredible. We went to the back of this cave, and there was airflow. I guess it was more of a tunnel. It's in a karst formation, and a lot of these karsts have water going through them. It was like this air conditioner, so it was so cool and beautiful in there. And these bats were clinging at eye level from the... And they're hanging on to next to nothing. Look at this.
Yes, yeah.
And this guy was actually moving in the breeze, just swaying from the wind coming out, this cool wind. And I was able to go up and just gently touch the fur in the back. And it was absolutely magical. So great place for bats. They have the flying foxes, which are huge.
Oh, yes,
And arthropod diversity, again.
Yeah.
This is a very cool, this is called the giraffe-necked weevil. We'll put this on the photos on the website. But the giraffe neck weevil, an incredible thing. I mean, look at this.
Yeah, so I can't really tell. Is its head way the heck out here? So it's got a long stalk coming out of what looks like it's out of the main part of its body.
The abdomen,
So the long stalk at the end of it has the head. It's very, very interesting looking.
Yeah, and the males and females are apparently dimorphic.
Okay.
There's a big difference, and I think this is a male. Anyways. Yeah. Now this one will throw.
Oh yeah, we've got a great crypto camouflage thing going on here.
Leaf-tailed gecko.
It is another gecko. Yeah.
Leaf-tailed gecko is a very amazing animal. So this is a funny situation. We were on an island off of Maswala Peninsula, and our guide was walking us through, and he says, "Here, look at this." And he's just pointing at the trunk, and I thought he was pointing at a lichen or something, you know. And it took me forever, and then all of a sudden I noticed. It looked like this thing, this image of this imprint of something that was plastered into the tree. This is a leaf-tailed gecko, but look at this thing. Absolutely incredible. You should see the eyes on them. I mean, look at this.
Right. So the eyes look almost like chameleon eyes. And are they socketed that can swivel in several different directions?
No.
Oh,
but
okay.
It's interesting you mentioned that. Madagascar is, and I don't have the photos here yet, but I will have lots. We spent a lot of time with...
Carry on.
That's it.
Okay, well, can we go back to the gecko here?
Yep.
Couple of questions. First of all, for our listeners, this looks like it looks like somebody has taken a frog and stretched it out so that its hind legs are sticking out way behind it and just put it on the trunk of a tree. And it's sort of a pale greenish-gray color with little spots of brown and such, and it approximates very well the lichen-covered tree that it's on. Yeah, it's got there are actual patches of lichen right there that are pretty nearly the same color.
And I'm not 100% sure, but I might have some... transdermal, you know.
I was wondering if it had any adaptive ability. Okay.
I believe it can change its skin color.
And one other question about these guys. Now, in this picture, this is fantastic because you can see the toes very clearly, and the toes are spatulate in formation. Yes. Is that characteristic of all the geckos?
I think so. I think geckos, on the whole, they're often clinging to things and having these like large feet that act
almost
as like a suction cup,
like sticky pads
sticky
or something.
Pads.
Yeah, that
exactly.
allow them to climb up rather than claws, like
That's
we're
right.
familiar with from other kinds of lizards.
Another one that we started looking for these, and I made it my challenge after lunch. We had some time to walk around while we were waiting for a boat to pick us up, and I wanted to just find my own because the guide kept spotting it, and I failed miserably. I never found one, and our guide kept holding back, and then finally he's like, there it is. But we got to the point where our guide, he was a wonderful guy. He would stand there and he'd be like holding himself, trying to point it out, but he would get to a place where we could see one. And that was our
right,
hint.
Right.
And we would stand there and we would just stare. And but one of them we got up quite close to get some photos, and he actually maybe a little bit too close for a sec, and he just reared up.
Yeah.
And my gosh, when they leave, they look like totally flattened on here,
right?
And once they rear up, they come out and their mouth opens and their eyes are wide, and they're just they're incredible predators. Basically, they're just sitting and waiting, and then boom, they just
so they're mostly insect eaters, are they? I'm assuming
they're mostly insect eaters. Okay. In fact, I think entirely insect eaters. I believe, they're absolutely incredible. And I had some really I really got into the sort of the amphibians and the reptiles, the herptiles there, because the diversity is incredible. And so one of the things we did on a lot of evenings, we went out for night walks. Just after sundown is when the chameleons come out,
right?
And the leaf-tailed geckos are starting to move. The mouse lemurs start showing up because they're nocturnal. And so I went out on multiple occasions, and you're just basically walking these trails with your light and you're scanning for them. And it's incredible what you find. And it's like these trails where there's nothing. All of a sudden in the daylight, they're all things clinging to the foliage.
Right.
And
all different things from what you see in the daylight, too.
Exactly.
So it's worth a trip, obviously.
The endemism is incredible. One of our guides works for a wonderful guy who I actually met in 2011, Christopher Roxworthy of Michigan State and University. And he's one of the leading herpetologists. He's been going to Madagascar for over 20 years, and he's found countless number of new species to science. And we had our guide, as it turned out, he was his field assistant for all that time.
Mm-hmm.
and he works with them every year. So it was a really neat connection. There's a picture of us together, and it was really fun to meet this guy. And he was telling us about some of the species. And so this guy had actually found 4 species new to science.
Wow.
Working with Christopher. And the holotype, or the specimens that are dedicated to the description of the species, are some of them, I think, are in New York. Others are in the Michigan collection. But it's just wonderful. So we had people like that, and it was really enhanced the trip. And they could really wonderful. Find stuff. And he showed us some Madagascar boa, and he's, you know, a really, really cool snake.
Excellent.
Yeah, it was an amazing place.
Well, your description of the what the guide took you guys through trying to find the leaf-tailed gecko, it sounds like Where's Waldo, except it's Where's Gecko instead.
Where's Gecko instead of Where's Waldo, but way harder.
Yeah, way harder. Yeah,
way harder.
Yeah, this this gecko is not wearing a white and red striped shirt or anything like Waldo. So,
yeah, that's
very
right.
Cool.
So.
Well, Ken, I have to say, this sounds like the adventure of a lifetime.
It truly was. It was a trip of a lifetime, and you know, I mean, ridiculous. The longest trip you can imagine getting there, but it's so worth it. It was the most amazing. I would go back there again in a heartbeat. It's a naturalist paradise. It's a beautiful place. The people are wonderful, very trustworthy, and accommodating, and just. I can't recommend it more. If anybody has the funds and can do a trip to Madagascar, I highly recommend it. And get in touch with me. I'll give you some tips, because it's important how to get around in Madagascar. And it is a wonderful place. They need the tourism. And, you know, I'd say forget your Mexico and Hawaii trips for several years. Bank that and go to Madagascar once. It will be a trip that will change you, and it'll enrich your life tremendously.
Well, that's fantastic, and thank you very much for telling us about it and for coming in for the interview. And listeners, as Ken said, he will send me some pictures that I will post on the website, and you can see some of these life forms that we've talked about. Thanks very much, Ken.
Thank you.
Good.
Right on.